Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
December 6, 2005, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Tonight's episode, Low Light Photography. Low Light Photography. Yeah, it's a really good topic, and I look forward to talking about it. Before I get to it, however, I have a couple things to cover, as you may have guessed. First of all, this is podcast number 10. Podcast number 10. And many of you, I know from your notes and mail that I've received, have actually listened to all 9 podcasts up until this point, which I, including the infamous podcast number 7, where technically everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong, and hung in there even through that one, and continue to listen today. And I just, you know, podcast number 10, I just want to take a moment and thank you all for listening to the show. And on that note, I want to announce the winner of the iPod Shuffle. As you know, a few shows ago, I announced the world's easiest contest, which all you had to do was go to the show notes for podcast number 8. And let me know which digital camera you'd love to buy if you had the money in your bank account. And a lot of you did. And in fact, if you haven't gone and reviewed those notes, you ought to take a look at it. It's pretty interesting to see what folks are interested in buying. So there's a whole bunch of comments there, and it's kind of worth a look. But the winner of the podcast is Manly. And he posted a note on there. He's from Pennsylvania, and he actually sent me a note after I let him know that he had won. And he said, "I love the podcast. I've been listening since show number 1. So he's a real, we know he has fortitude, right? "I'm new to photography, and it's been very helpful to me. Just listened to number 9 today on my way to work, but never imagined I would win the shuffle. Thanks again." And so thank you so much, Manly, for listening. And as I mentioned before, I'm going to do contests regularly, so keep listening. We'll probably start another one here in a few weeks, and we'll give you all a shot again at winning something fun. So congratulations to Manly, and thanks for listening. And Manly, the shuffle is in the mail. Okay. Another thing I want to mention real quickly, grab shots for this week. I don't have quite as many coming in. And as you know, if you've been listening, it's your opportunity to submit a photograph that you kind of caught, you know, a slice of life sort of shot. A lot of times because you had a camera with you when most people normally wouldn't. And we've been running them. I've tried to run a couple a week on the site itself. If you're sitting on something, that would be good for consideration. This would probably be a good week to go ahead and send it on in. Let me take a look at it, and let's keep those grab shots flowing. I might actually have one posted where I'll post one maybe when this show goes up. And if you have a chance, go ahead and post a comment saying, you know, do you like this feature? Is it something that you know you want to see more of? Is it something that maybe you don't like so much? Why don't you give some feedback to a grab shot that I'm going to post? That way, I don't want to do it so much on a reader grab shot, because that's not really the place to have a conversation about if we like these things or not. Let's do it on one of mine, because frankly, I can take it. I think I probably need to hear some feedback if you guys like this feature, and if we should keep running it. Personally, I like it. I love the idea of all of you being able to submit shots and have them show up on the site. So let me know what you think about them. And if you're sitting on a good grab shot, go ahead and send it in. And if you're wondering how to do that, all you have to do is hit the submissions button on the digitalstory.com site, and it kind of lists out how to do that. It's real easy. Okay, let's get to the topic of today's show. And the idea for this show came from a reader or listener, from Jeff. And Jeff wrote me, he said, Derek, really enjoying the podcast, looking forward to it every week. Could you cover tips for shooting in low light, including how to use an external hot shoe flash? I have to take shots a lot of events. I'm not a photographer by trade and really struggle with camera shake and using the external flash and what do all those buttons do. Bumping up the ISO helps a little, but would love to hear a low light episode sometime. Well, let's do a low light episode right now. Actually, low light photography, or often what I call existing light photography, is, I think, one of the joys of digital photography. Digital cameras do great in low light, I think much better than their film counterparts. Film cameras, as I've mentioned before, they do real well in bright, contrasty light. Sometimes digital cameras suffer in those conditions, but low light, boy, that's going right to the strength of many digital cameras. But there are ways to improve your low light results. And I'm going to go over a few of them right now. First, let's just start out with image noise and image sensor. We've talked a little bit about this in the past. But right off the bat, a lot of times in low light photography, you will have to increase your ISO setting. And the default, or where I think you should keep it normally, is at 100. That's your good general shooting ISO. But as you get into interior shooting or low light shooting, a lot of times you're going to have to bump it up to 400 or 800. And on some cameras, you can even push it a little bit more, all the way to 1600, although generally, I don't recommend that, but 400 to 800. Now, the thing to keep in mind, of course, is that with digital SLRs, you have a little bit more latitude. You can increase your ISO to 800 with most digital SLRs and still get pretty good results. And of course, the higher the number, the more you increase the ISO. Essentially, what you're doing is you're making your image sensor more sensitive to light, and therefore it can capture more information when less light is available. But increasing your ISO to 400 or 800 isn't the only answer, and there are other things that you need to keep in mind. Let's go with a digital SLR for just a moment, since we started out there. And of course, with a digital SLR, you can shoot at 400 or 800 and a lot of times not have too much noise in the shot. But you're still dealing with the actual physics of light. And a lot of people, when they get a digital SLR, they buy the zoom that comes with the camera, or maybe they have a zoom lens already that they mount on the camera. And the thing to keep in mind about zoom lenses is that they're really great in terms of versatility, right? You can go from 28 millimeters to 135 or whatever your zooming range is, and that's very handy. But you pay a price. There's always a trade-off in photography. And the trade-off for most zoom lenses, especially the ones that cost less than a couple thousand dollars, is that they don't let as much light in to the camera. And a lot of times the maximum aperture for a standard consumer zoom lens will be something like f3.5 or f4.5, sometimes even 5.6 if you're zooming out. And the higher the number that you go on that maximum aperture, the less light that lens can let through to the image sensor. So for instance, a lens that has a maximum aperture of f2.8 can let in a lot more light than a lens that has a maximum aperture of f4.5. Okay, now the more light that a lens can let through to the image sensor, the less you have to do on the other end of the equation, such as increasing the ISO, slowing down the shutter speed, whatever it happens to be, you have to do less of that when you have more light coming in the lens. So in low light photography, one of the first things that you want to look for, especially if you know you're going to be doing this a lot, is a lens that lets in the most amount of light possible. This is why a lot of photographers that shoot in these situations like to have one or two lenses that are what we call fast. And a fast lens, in photography terms, is one that lets in a lot of light. Probably the term comes from fast being that since more light's coming in, you can use a faster shutter speed. I have no idea if that's really where the term came from, but that's just my own kind of logic at work there. Now, usually a fast lens is what we call a prime lens. And a prime lens is a lens that doesn't zoom. So the standard prime lens in the business is the ubiquitous, or what used to be the ubiquitous 50 millimeter f1.7 or 1.8 lens. In the old days, this was the lens that came with the camera. It wasn't a 28 to 85 zoom. It was a 50 millimeter lens, and it was usually pretty darn fast, right around f1.7. Now, a lens that lets in that much light really gives you a lot of options in existing light photography. The good news is, if you don't have a prime lens right now, if you only have a zoom lens or two, that camera manufacturers have kindly kept the price down on these lenses. So you can usually pick up a brand new manufactured labeled 50 millimeter lens for less than $100. A lot of times you can get them for around $70 or $80 online. And even though you don't have the zooming range that you have with the other lens, you have a lot of light coming in. Now this gets really interesting with a camera that has an APS size sensor. And you know that's that sensor that's not, you know, the so-called full frame, but for instance, the Canon Digital Rebel, the Canon 20D, the Nikon D70, even the D200 that's just coming out. These are all less than full frame size sensors, which means that they have a magnification that they add to the lens. And it's usually right around 1.5 or 1.6. Now, the reason why I say this is interesting is that if you put a 50 millimeter f1.7 lens on one of these cameras and then multiply by 1.5, suddenly you have like a 75 or 80 millimeter lens that's very fast. It has a very, very good maximum aperture. These are terrific for low light photography. They make everything else a lot easier because so much light is coming in the lens. Then maybe instead of having to increase your ISO from 800 up to 800, you can keep it at 400 and still have a decent shutter speed. Now, all of these things, I don't know if anyone's ever really kind of explained the relationship to you between f-stops and shutter speeds and ISO settings, but there is a relationship there. So, for instance, if you go from ISO 400 to ISO 800, that's one f-stop. That's the same as going from f2.8 to f4. Okay? So, if you have a lens that is way down there at f1.7, you've gained about 3 f-stops of light over the standard zoom lens. That's tremendous. Now, the shutter speeds, the relationship of shutter speeds is the same thing. You know, when you go from 1/125th of a second to 1/250th of a second, that's 1 f-stop or 1 full ISO setting. And you go from 1/250th of a second to 1/500th of a second, there's another full f-stop. So if you have a lens that's giving you, let's say, 3 extra f-stops of light, such as a f1.7, then suddenly what you would take, you know, let's say a 1/60th of a second would be the shutter speed that you'd have to use with a zoom lens. Suddenly you can have a shutter speed that's 1/60th to 1/125th, 1/125th to 1/500th, 1/500th to 1/1000th. You can shoot at 1/1000th of a second instead of 1/60th of a second. So you begin to see the implications of these fast lenses. They're really tremendous. So I know, you know, I'm talking about going out and spending some money, close to $100. But if you're serious about low light photography and you have a digital SLR, I think you should have one prime lens in your collection at some point. Maybe not now, but maybe someday. Just one more thing about those lenses, and then I'll move on. Now, one of my most prized lenses in my camera bag is a 85mm f1.8. I bought it back in the days when I was only shooting film. No way. There weren't even digital SLRs then, and if there were, I couldn't afford them. And I got it for a pretty good price. I mean, it was a little pricey. It's a Canon lens. I think it cost me around $300. Well, now that lens on, let's say, my Digital Rebel, where you multiply by, 1.6 magnification, and suddenly I have something right around, I'm not doing the math probably that great in my head right now, but right around a 1/35 zoom lens at f1.8. So not only do I have reach, I have a lot of light coming in the lens. And I would have just given my back teeth for a lens like that back when I was shooting sporting events with film. So these prime lenses come in very, very handy. And there's something to take a look at if you are a low light photography junkie. Okay, so that's the whole lens spiel. And I probably will, I think in the show notes, what I'll do is I'll try to, because, I know I just kind of ran through the relationships of ISOs and shutter speeds and f-stops. I'll try to spell that out a little bit better in the show notes so that you can go and take a look at those and really kind of understand what's going on there. Now, sometimes you have to turn on the flash. Just because there's not enough light or there's too much movement. And even if you could get a good exposure, the shutter speed would be so slow that it would be blurry, and you just need a flash. So this is a case where I think you really need an external flash that mounts in a hot shoe. The flashes that they build into our digital cameras are very handy, and I think they're extremely handy for fill flash situations, especially portraits, where you just want to add a little light, maybe a catch light in the eyes, or just add a little light to the front of the subject. But they're not very powerful, and you usually have to be within 8 to 10 feet. The external flashes that mount in the hot shoe put out a lot more light, and they're very intelligent these days. Now, one thing I'll tell you right now about external flashes, they are pricey. They are one of those photo accessories that you just pay a lot for. And I don't know if camera manufacturers are trying to get their money back on electronic flashes, because to me, they don't seem that complicated to where they should cost $250 or more, but many of them do. And that's just the way it is. Plus, a lot of times you don't want to mount it right on the camera. you want it kind of up and away from the camera, so then you need a dedicated flash cord, and they get you for another $50 there. So just know that, you know, this next little section where I'm talking about external flashes, know that this is a pretty pricey investment if you haven't made it already. The good news about these flashes, the good news is that they're pretty darn powerful and pretty darn smart. So you can illuminate a subject that is, you know, 20 feet away with these flashes. They have enough output. And especially if you increase your ISO setting to 200 or 400, that is basically extending the range of the flash so it can go even farther. And a lot of times these flashes will even tell you, what distance they can cover, depending on what f-stop you have set and so forth. Now, generally speaking, the best way to use an external flash is just to put your camera in program mode, mount the flash, turn it on, and start shooting. The flashes and the cameras are tuned to each other, and they communicate very well. If you notice that when you look in the hot shoe, there are multiple contact points where the flash and the camera communicate. The big round contact, the one that's in the center of your hot shoe, that's just basically tripping the flash. That just tells it, you know, when you push the shutter, a little charge goes up through that and causes the flash to fire. But then you notice there are other little contact points, smaller ones around that, and those are communications going back and forth constantly between the flash and the camera, trying to essentially give you the best exposure possible. Now, when you're in a low light situation and there isn't a whole lot of ambient light, sometimes your flash shots can look a little stark. In other words, the flash might have the ability to reach the subject itself, but it won't capture a lot of ambient light outside of flash range, and therefore it all goes dark. You can combat that because almost every digital SLR and any camera that has a hot shoe basically has something called nighttime flash mode or slow synchro flash or something like that. And compact cameras have them also. And what this does is that it slows down the shutter speed to the point to where your camera can capture, you know, some of the environmental light, but at the same time, the flash fires so that anything within flash range is properly illuminated. And this gives you a lot more context to your flash shots. Now, unfortunately, if you're shooting sports photography, this mode isn't very helpful because the way that it as I mentioned, that it allows you to capture ambient light is by slowing down the shutter speed. Well, when you have action, slowing down the shutter speed is one of the last things that you want to do because, you know, you get motion blur. So if you're a sports photographer, generally speaking, using a flash, first of all, is frowned upon most of the time because it can interfere with the sports action itself. You don't want to flash a basketball player in the eyes right when he's, you know, trying to make a free throw. I would say that's considered bad photography etiquette. So, you're kind of in an existing light situation, and that's why, generally speaking, most sports photographers will go with the fast lenses and the higher ISO settings so that they don't have to use a flash and so that they have half a chance of freezing the action. However, if you're shooting in low light, let's say a wedding reception where people aren't moving as fast, in fact, sometimes they're sort of semi-posing as they're talking or whatever, then you can use a flash in that setting, and you can use these nighttime flash mode or the slow synchro flash mode to also get some of the environmental texture of the scene too. So flash plus slow synchro or nighttime flash is good for portrait photography and for event photography where people aren't racing around, but not so good for sports photography. Sports photography, I think you got to go just pure existing light. Now, if you have manual settings on your camera, you don't have to use these special modes. I'll give you the magic settings right now. Set it at 1/30th of a second for your shutter speed, and at f5.6 for your aperture, and turn on your flash. Your shots will look a lot better than if you just shoot in program mode. And if you really have a steady hand, you can slow your shutter speed down to 1/15th of a second. You'll get even more ambient light, provided this is good, provided that people aren't moving around too fast, because now you're starting to get into kind of slow shutter speed territory. That's why 1/30th of a second is a good starting point. See how your pictures look on the LCD monitor. And if you're not quite getting enough background information, then set the shutter speed to 1/15th of a second and take a look, and you'll probably be happy as long as there isn't too much motion blur. So that's the trick for shooting event photography with a flash. Those are the magic settings. You can move your ISO up to 200 or 400 if you want. 1/15th or 1/130th of a second at f5.6. Turn on your flash and fire away. Otherwise, I think you're back to the fast lens. And this is where, you know, as I mentioned, these lenses, these prime lenses, actually cost less than flashes. You can get a quality lens for less than you can a quality flash. So it's something to look at also for situations where you really want mood and texture and all that sort of stuff, and you don't want to interfere with the event by flashing a flash. Those are really your main options for existing light photography. You do have one other option. Most people don't take advantage of it, and that's mounting your camera on a tripod. Okay, and you can leave it in program mode in this case, and then either using a cable release or turning on the self timer so that you're not jarring the camera when you take the picture, and then trip the shutter. Now, the reason why this works and why you get a good exposure is because the camera's mounted on the tripod, you have it in program mode, and it will set, you know, whatever settings it takes to get a good shot. The thing is, you can't hold the camera, you know, yourself for these types of pictures, because you'll jar the camera and you'll get camera shake. The bad news is, of course, that first of all, you have to carry around a tripod. Second of all, you're probably going to have really slow shutter speeds, like 1 second or 1/2 a second. So if people are moving around, forget it. They're going to get motion blur. But it's great for shooting things like interior architecture, things that don't move, right? Still lives, interior rooms, maybe even outdoor shots at twilight, things like that, using a tripod, and then using either the self timer or a remote release to trip the shutter, you'll get very good results. You can just leave it in program mode. And the neat thing about this is a case where you're shooting in low light and you don't have to increase the ISO, because it doesn't make any difference really how long the shutter speed is. Okay, so go ahead and keep that ISO at 100 so that you keep image noise down and you'll get a tack sharp shot. Boy, that's not really easy to say, because the camera is being held so steadily on the tripod. So those are basically your three methods for coping with low light, Fast lens, method one. External flash, method two. Or mounted on a tripod, method three. Each have their own strengths, and I will review those in the show notes so that you can just refer to them. Okay, so that's our quick dive into low-light photography. I hope that it helps you as you try to figure out which method is the best for you. I'll be talking more about this stuff in future shows, and if you have specific questions to follow up on what I talked about today, just post a comment to the show notes and or just send me mail, either questions at thedigitalstory.com or derek@thedigitalstory.com. Either way, I'll get it, and we'll just keep this conversation going until you get the information that you need. Thanks for listening to show number 10. It's been great having you. Keep those comments coming. As I mentioned before, if you're sitting on a grab shot, now's a good time to send it in, and I'll talk to you next week. Happy shooting, and bye for now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.